It's the Lee Rayburn Show, and I remember when I was a kid traveling back and forth on Highway 12 between Baraboo and Madison, the rows after rows of white buildings that to me, even at the time, seemed like a ghost town, and I didn't know at the time how right I could be. This hour, we're taking a look at what used to be the Badger Army Ammunition Plant and where it stands today and what it plans for its future. If you've been or have questions about this place that seemed to me to be a ghost town at the time, you can join us because it is full of life today. If you want to know what you should visit or what you can do there or what became of the past at this land, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to talk@WPR.org. Our guests this hour are Melanie Talmadge Sines, who is a citizen of the Ho-Chunk Nation, a visual and cultural arts educator, and executive director of Little Eagle Arts Foundation. Melanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nipi. Good morning. Inikiki. Thank you so much.
Also joining us, Mike Mossman, who is president of the Badger History Group, also a retired DNR ecologist. And Mike, welcome to you.
Good to be here. Hi, Melanie. Hi, Lee.
I want to start with you, Mike, and just give us a little bit of the history of this, which we call Badger Lands today, and how we got to where we are today.
Yeah, the Badger Army Ammunition Plant, now often called the Badger Lands or Mabakanchunk, is about 7,300 acres, and it's about half of it is on the terminal moraine between Baraboo and Sauk City, and about half of it is on the flat, very fertile outwash plain that comes off the moraine, and then a little bit of it lies along the foot of the Baraboo Hills on the north end. It was, you know, a big part of it was glaciated, and which receded from, you know, 15 to 18,000 years ago. And indigenous people were probably there already. The Ho-Chunk were there probably most of the time, or their ancestors. The Sauk tribe was there during the mid-1700s when it was first being visited by white explorers, and that gave so much of the area the name Sauk, like Sauk Prairie or Prairie de Sac, etc. But the Ho-Chunk came back, and they were removed, so to speak, around the early 1800s, 1830s, but never really left. Melanie can talk more about that. They were replaced by the Euro-American farm community, which developed there starting in the 1840s. And the plant came in and displaced them in 1942 at the beginning of World War II. And then it served for three wars, and then it closed in 97, and there's been huge changes that have happened there with deconstruction, et cetera. And there's, throughout this history, there's recurring themes of how we use the land and how the land survives and holds our memories, as well as how it holds its history. And topics of change and displacement and collaboration are really wonderfully connected at Badger.
Melanie, what's the importance of this land to the Ho-Chunk Nation?
Well, I shared this with you when I submitted my information. I am not an employee of the Ho-Chunk Nation, so I'm not speaking on behalf of my people, but I am a citizen, an enrolled citizen, and I was born in Baraboo and raised in Wisconsin Dells, and the land itself, akin to what we call Day Wakanchuk. Day means lake or pond. Wakanchuk doesn't have a direct translation in English, but it means holy, sacred, revered. So Sacred Lake, which was renamed by the Europeans who settled the land after they forcibly removed the Ho-Chunk, called it Devil's Lake as a means to, promote tourism in the area, which it was very successful at. But what my mother told me when I was a child is, I think the European settlers realized the spiritual connection that Ho-Chunk people have had since the beginning of time to that area, Day Wakanchuk, and then Ma Wakanchuk. Ma means land or earth. They recognized our spiritual connection to that land. So what better way to sever the ties to a group of people that they wanted, you know, to force removal and genocide? That was their attempt, you know, than to call it the exact opposite of our sentiments toward that land and call it Devil's Lake. So like I said, you know, there's evidence of Ho-Chunks being in and around this area for, you know, 5,000 years. The canoes that are being revealed in the Dajope or Madison area, you know, are now being carbon dated. So there's proof that we've been around here for many, many years. And just the continuity of the Ho-Chunk connection in terms of, you know, the early different family encampments that were once, you know, on that area. There's been evidence of a pipestone or two pipestone quarries in the area known as Mawakanchuk. And then also evidence of remains from our medicine lodge, in terms of the land. Mm-hmm. So it's a long continual connection to this very spiritual and beautiful, beautiful area.
Mike referred to the forest Indian removal period of the 1830s all the way up until the 1880s, I believe. But I've also heard the stories that when the Ho-Chunk people were removed from this land, wherever they ended up, Nebraska, Minnesota, they would make the trek and walk all the way back to this place.
This is our homeland, our traditional homeland. We believe our creation story takes place just east of Green Bay, Wisconsin, in Red Lakes, and in that area, Red Banks, you know, connects us to so much of the mitten of Wisconsin, and mostly, you know, the area around Green Bay all the way to south central Wisconsin. So the connections my family had through the White Rabbit, Decoras, and the Miner family, you know, is vast amongst, you know, all the way from the Wisconsin Dells, Nielsville area, all the way down to Madison. So, you know, our people, like today, many of us are transitory in nature, you know, that's a part of our culture.
So, Mike, tell us about what happened after the Army ammunition plant closed and the process it began to go through to be what we see today.
Yeah, it was a pretty fascinating and kind of charged time. After the Army announced in late 97 that it would be decommissioning the plant, people came together to talk, but we didn't really do a very good job of listening, and there was a lot of, you know, sort of pain from displacement, from for example, from the, you know, the Ho-Chunk had a deep tradition there, and they were displaced from this land. The Euro-American farmers were displaced, and there was a lot of pain left from that occurrence in 1942 that just surfaced kind of like crazy when the Army announced that it would close. And there were people that worked here their whole lives at Badger, met their spouses, et cetera, that this was a very important place for them. They were being displaced in a sense, and they were seeing a bunch of vultures descend on what was a very important place for them. And there were other people who wanted to see it go back to Prairie. There were people like myself at the time who thought it was just a reminder of a war machine and wanted to see it completely obliterated and start anew. People wanted to use it for industry, racetracks, landfills, all sorts of things. You know, it was, and people really needed to tell their stories, and that became obvious when we were talking past each other, and there was kind of more argument than agreement on anything, and more discord than understanding. And a woman stood up and said, you know, at one of the meetings, and said, you know, we're like a family that's gotten a really great inheritance. Rather than sitting down and talking about how to use it for the betterment of the family in the long term and for future generations, people start wanting to get as much as they can for themselves. And the family falls apart, and it would have been better to never have gotten it in the first place. And that is like what it was starting to feel like. So Tammy Baldwin at the time was a congresswoman, and she arranged to get some money and get the authority to get a nice, lengthy, considerate process going in which people could talk and we could come up and understand what ended up happening was people from, you know, over 20 people representing local and federal and state and county agencies and landowners, et cetera, came up with a list of, you know, of shared values, which was so critical, and it involved so much listening, and it transformed everybody. It transformed the community in a large, to a large extent. And the reuse plan then kind of guided the future of the plant. And then it was, you know, divided into four landowners. And we can talk about that more if you want later.
That's Mike Mossman, president of the Badger History Group, online at badgerhistorygroup.org. Or is it badgerhistory.org? Double check that. Badgerhistorygroup.org, I apologize.
Yes.
Also joining us, Melanie Talmadge Sines, citizen of the Ho-Chunk Nation, executive director of the Little Eagle Arts Foundation, online at littleeaglearts.org, and a visual and cultural arts educator talking about the former Badger Army Ammunition Plant, now more commonly called Badgerlands. And you can join our conversation with your questions or your stories about this land at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk at WPR.org. And Melanie, as I hear Mike talk about the shared values that began to guide reuse, some of those shared values, I would imagine, would have to be returning the land to its original owners, and this idea of using this opportunity as reconciliation.
I really like that concept of reconciliation, because when you think of the forced removals of the Ho-Chunk that occurred between 1820 to 1870, I mean, there are many of my ancestors that still remained in hiding in Wisconsin, but the fact that we were removed, you know, several times to several different areas, from South Dakota to Minnesota, eventually Iowa, and now our reservation, which is down in Winnebago, Nebraska, those people and the Ho-Chunk people are the same culture. It's just that our neighbors to the south continue to use the name, the label given to us by Europeans, which was based on the Menominee term, what I've been told. Winnebago, which means people who live by a kind of an earthy smelling water. So that Winnebago was changed to Winnebago. Huh. So we've always called ourselves Ho-Chunk or Ho-Chungara, which means people of the big voice. And in terms of our kinship to the land and our legacy there, you know, it was really some of our chiefs of the area, particularly, let's say, Yellow Thunder, who was able to, you know, take advantage of that Homestead Act. I believe that was in 1875, in which he was able to secure 40 acres. My also great-great-great-grandfather Blue Wing, a Ho-Chunk near Reedsburg, was able to achieve the same. And so once our relatives, even though the moccasin telegraph, you know, it wasn't like sending a text to your neighbors, no one had telephones back then, but the word spread. And as soon as, you know, word got out that land was, you know, being held by our chiefs in the Sauk County area, people had the opportunity to come back and they could not be removed. And there's a beautiful story in Reedsburg where there was an attempt to remove my great-grandfather, Blue Wing, a Ho-Chunk, but it was the city of Reedsburg that stood up and defended him, and he and his family were able to stay.
So this land becomes, at least in part of the debate after the Badger Army ammunition plant closes, I would imagine that part of this debate is whether or not the Ho-Chunk Nation has a right to this land. Melanie.
Yeah, and it's unique because, you know, philosophically, we as Native peoples, I mean, the earth is our mother. How can you own your mother? You know, instead, that's a European colonialist mindset to have ownership of land. Instead, we prefer to call ourselves land stewards, to care and compassionately, you know, take care of our land. And with that mindset, you know, our neighbors, the Sauk people, the Menominees, Potawatomis, you know, people, there was a constant fluidity amongst these lands, and people knew where, you know, traditional or sacred places of different entities were, and they respected that. But, you know, the irony is we live in Sauk County, which was named after, you know, the tribe that was forcibly removed. And now most of their people, you know, live hundreds, if not thousands of miles away in Oklahoma. So, you know, one of the things we've tried to do, like with our Indigenous Peoples Day here in Sauk County, is welcome back the original, you know, citizens of this area by welcoming back various tribes that have been removed.
Let's go to your questions now for Mike Mossman and Melanie Talmadge Sines about the former Badger Army Ammunition Plant, 1-800-642-1234, or email us talk at WPR.org. And we'll start with Jack in Madison. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Lee. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, hearing your opening to this segment, talking about road trips around this area, I thought back to many road trips that my family would take to Dr. Evermore's Sculpture Garden, which was right across from there. And, of course, to Devil's Lake, which was just north of it. And I had a couple of thoughts about, you know, what has happened and what might happen in the future. And, like, it reminds me a little of what happened in Los Alamos, New Mexico, with the Manhattan Project and the testing of the atomic bomb. And obviously, it wasn't as devastating from what I understood, fortunately, but there still was that, you know, negative environmental impact and that on the local population. So part of me wonders, like, how that history and, I guess, the decision to, like, if some people were thinking of converting the land that Badger Land sits on back into the original prairie, like, kind of how that all factors into the conversation and informs the current process of deciding what to do with the land.
It's a perfect question, Jack. And Mike, I'll let you handle that, because the soil remediation, the pollution mitigation, all part of this plan, right?
Yeah. Badger's, you know, got its unique history, and contamination is part of it. And healing the land is a big part of the story for all the landowners and all the people that care about Badger at this point. And that's part of the reconciliation that Melanie was talking about. And I think a lot of people feel that this is not land that we think about as owning, but as stewarding it. And we have a responsibility to get to know it, to take care of it, and to love it. And the Ho-Chunk being present is a big help with that, by the way. It's a reminder all the time. So part of this, you're talking, Jack, about prairie restoration, and that's going on. And that's a goal both of the Ho-Chunk on their land and of the DNR. So the Ho-Chunk has done great work on that in terms of restoring some of the grasslands. And they, you know, going at it a bit at a time. Once you start a restoration, you have to keep up with it. It takes work for years. And so you can't try to go out and do too much at once. But they've converted, you know, a few hundred acres already to prairie, or it's in the process. Some of the grasslands that are out there now are actually very good grasslands for grassland birds and other wildlife habitat, even though they're still the European grasses that were there for the cattle grazing and hay. So we have a mixture out there, and it's gradually turning to native vegetation. It does take work, and one of the most important aspects of that is trying to control invasion by exotic shrubs and trees which come in, especially in the absence of fire.
So there are four different stewards of this former Badger Army Ammunition Plant today. One of them is the Ho-Chunk Nation, another is the DNR. How does this break down, and how did this decision get made ultimately, Mike?
Well, the federal government made the decision basically who was going to get what. And they all had, it was an interesting process where each landowner, each prospective landowner had to be spoken for, really, or sort of sponsored by a federal agency. So the Park Service spoke for the DNR, the Bureau of Indian Affairs spoke for the Ho-Chunk Nation, the U.S. Department of Agriculture spoke for the Dairy Forage Research Center. And so the land was divided up, and you know, I was not in on the sausage making with the, you know, who got how many acres, but in the end, the DNR is responsible for about 3,300 the Ho-Chunk for about 1,500 acres, Dairy Forage for 2,100 acres, and then there's the Bluffview Sanitary District, which has 165 acres, and that's all associated with the wastewater treatment plant, which has been there since the plant was there, of course.
Back to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234, and Marlo in Westby is next. Hi, Marlo.
Yes, good morning.
What do you have for us today?
No, the program is interesting. I know nothing about it except that my brother-in-law used to work over there. He made the drive from here in Westby, probably 75 miles. He worked there a year or two or something like that back in 1971.
What did he say about it?
Well, it was a long time ago. I don't think he said anything about it, except that that was his job, and it's a long drive, and so that, you know.
That is quite a commute, especially way back then, working at the plant. But considering the 1,400-plus buildings that were on that property, and some of them, I believe, at some time would have included housing, do we have an idea of how many people worked there, Mike, at any time?
Yeah, well, the biggest workforce was there during construction, during the, 1942 and 1943, and that was, 12,000 people. So, a lot more than were in the, all the adjacent communities combined. And, and then each World War II, then there was 3 years of production from 43 to 45, and that had about 7,500, I think, for workforce. Korea and Vietnam, respectively, 1951 to 57 for Korea, more production. Vietnam was 1966 to 75, the longest period of production there. And there are about 5,000 people working at Badger for both those periods. It had a huge effect on the communities and on the,
on the economy
and culturally.
Sure. Well, and when it comes to the cultural, I imagine, Melanie, it's hard to see that land used for conquest and war when it was attained through conquest and war.
Yeah, I think there's a mixed message there because both my parents worked there in the late 40s, early 50s, and they lived near Linden Station, Wisconsin. And the federal government and Badger Ordnance was sending out buses to pick up people so they wouldn't have to drive their own individual vehicles, or I would assume that many of them didn't own a car. So that made the transportation a lot easier. So, having that personal connection to Badger Ordnance, and also just knowing that, the economic opportunities and just what was needed in that area, the concept of veterans amongst our Ho-Chunk people, our veterans are held in very high esteem. So that's where the mixed message comes from. War is something we're currently involved in right now, and it's very difficult for us, especially when we hear of our soldiers being killed in battle. It's very sad, and it has a negative effect necessarily on families. But, within our Ho-Chunk honoring of our veterans, there's a certain reverence that goes along with that position of being a warrior, mostly men back in those days, but now both men and women are serving in the military. So, this place kind of has that memory of, war times. But now I'm just so proud of my Ho-Chunk Nation. My mother was one of the founding members of the Ho-Chunk Nation. My godmother and my mother's sister, Helen, was our first elected president of our tribe, and to see what they've been able to do in terms of the return of the land. I think it's been about 10 years since it was formally returned to the Ho-Chunk Nation, the 1,500 acres. I believe that we were able to obtain some of the cleanest land of the three different options. And now to see the restoration that they're doing, a lot of times when we have our Leaf Mawakanchunk Art Studio open, many of the people will ask if they can come visit. And they can if they get permission from the nation. But the flowers are just singing there. It's just beautiful to see the prairies.
And we'll take a tour of that land next when we continue with some of the folks who are helping to steward it. Melanie Talmadge-Sines, citizen of the Ho-Chunk Nation, executive director of Little Eagle Arts Foundation, and Mike Mossman, president of the Badger History Group and a retired DNR ecologist. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to WPR News. We're talking about the former Badger Army Ammunition Plant in Sauk County and what's become of it since it was shuttered at the end of the last century, and what we've seen over the last 25 years and what we can expect in the future. At the time, it helped provide powders and propellants for three wars, employed thousands, was a driver in the economy. It sometimes was the largest population in its area. Before that, of course, it was farmland, and before that, it was part of the Ho-Chunk Nation's stewardship, a place that they called Sacred Earth. What do you want to know about where this land stands today? Join us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guests, Mike Mossman, president of the Badger History Group, online at badgerhistory.org, and Melanie Talmadge Sines, a citizen of the Ho-Chunk Nation and executive director of Little Eagle Arts. Dot org. And Melanie, we were talking about where this land stands today, and of the four stewards of this land, the Ho-Chunk Nation is among one of them with about 1,500 acres. You said we could visit this proper, your part of the property, with an invitation. If we were to, what would we see there today?
Well, like, for instance, if you came to our studio, you'd see three or four LEAF, we use the acronym for Little Eagle Arts Foundation, LEAF artists engaged in public art, because we're preparing for the Day Joke History Project at four different locations around the Madison area, three in public city managed parks and one at the Arboretum, managed by UW-Madison. Five different Native artists, myself included, we'll have art pieces. So I've been weaving feet and feet of cattail mats over at the studio these days. It's a traditional art form utilized to cover our chi potokes. So chi means wood, poto means round, kere means to stand upright. So chi potoke, that's our traditional home form. Another home form frame that we make is a hazach, or like a covering, like a ramada or something like that. Just a shelter for shade. So we're, myself and my son Lightning Newrider, are working on a piece. So cattails and bulrush and maple saplings, some of them collected at Mawakanchuk.
And Mike had mentioned that part of this acreage includes some restored prairie.
Yeah, the prairie area, actually, it's just west of the Great Sauk State Trail. So if you're an avid bicyclist and you love coming up to Devil's Lake or Daywakanchuk, a great venue to get there is via the Great Sauk State Trail. And typically during the fall art tour, that's when I'm set up at our Mawakanchuk Art Gallery and Studio. So you're more than welcome to divert yourself off the trail and drive the additional mile down, heading west toward our studio. We'll have signage also on the trail. There'll also be signage on Highway 12, encouraging you to visit the museum, but also travel a little bit further east. The street isn't named because it's federally recognized as reservation land of the Ho-Chunk people. So it's those special occasions that we're able to invite. And, you know, we really encourage people to heed the signage there. If you see the small green and white signs with a bison on it, recognize that you're on tribal land. If you're a tribal citizen, you're more than welcome to be there. That's our land. But if you are not an enrolled citizen of the Ho-Chunk Nation, then you're trespassing. So we encourage you to be respectful of our of the land that's been returned to us.
Our producer, Clara Neipert, enjoys the Great Sauk Trail, and she also enjoys some of your artwork, which can be found along the trail, Earth, Sky, and Water.
Yeah, that was something actually that we were able to pull off during COVID. And, you know, as a small nonprofit educational organization, we had three grants during COVID that we had to return. But the one money-making, I guess, entity that we were able to hang on to was the Public Art Commission that we got from Rivers, from the Sauk County entity. And we were able to maintain a presence there by engaging four Ho-Chunk families that live in Sauk County to come over and safely create the clay tiles that we needed for the installation. My friend Munir Bahodin, a dear friend who's passed just recently, and Mars Patterson came together, and we were able to put it together with our fabrication team and our installation folks with the help of Sauk County Parks and Rec. It's been there since COVID, and it's gotten a lot of attention. And it, you know, really reflects kind of the symbols that show the connection of Ho-Chunk people to the land, whether it's clan symbols, your Ho-Chunk name, different words in the Ho-Chunk language. I mean, it's just a beautiful installation representing our connection there.
Mike Mossman, one of the other stewards of this former Badger Army ammunition plant, now better known as Badger Lands, is our Department of Natural Resources with a little over 3,300 acres, I imagine. What would we see when we travel there?
Well, if you come into the, you know, either on the Great Sauk Trail, which is, I agree with Melanie, is just a wonderful way to visit the track, and that's really increased the use of the Sauk Prairie State Rec area since it was installed. But otherwise, if you're not, you know, following that up from Sauk City or Prairie du Sac, you come in from the main entrance and you pass the Badger History Museum, and there's a farmer's memorial there. At the entrance, you pass the old guard station, and then you follow the DNR road that's open to the public, and you follow that around. And you pick up a map, okay, which will show you where the roads are. But the state land, you can walk anywhere, almost anywhere. There's a few off limit places like the landfill and so on, but there's plenty of stuff to see. It's been invaded a lot by shrubs, which the DNR is working, you know, as hard as they can to keep it open. But there's lots of grassland there and savanna-like sites. And you can see some of the ruins of some of the old buildings. You can see, if you look, and especially if you get the Badger app, which is a orientation and a instructive interpretive app that the Badger History Group sponsors. You can go and you look for some of the old house foundations and see the, you know, the old lilac bushes and that sort of thing. There's some cemeteries that are available to inspect too, and that you know has great sense of history in it. And you can see, especially if you're on the Great Sauk Trail and some of those roads, you're right on the edge of the Ho-Chunk land, so you get the chance to look out and see that vast grassland. It's pretty remarkable.
So there is an app for that, the Badger app, and you can
yes.
just put that on your phone. But what will I find inside the Badger History Museum, Mike?
Oh, okay. Well, the name of that app is Explore the Badger Lands, by the
okay.
way.
Okay, Explore
the museum,
Badger
yep. And in the museum, it's a very small space. It's what used to be the computer building for the Army once they got computers. And it was a whole building, which probably now the amount of memory in that building could be put on a very small chip. But it's an Army. It's one of the few remaining Army buildings. You can come in. It's a free museum. It's open from 10 till 4 on Tuesdays through Saturdays. And there will be one of the archivists or the curator there, Verlin Miller, Ori Eilertsen, are the people who are there a lot. Dan Halling is another person who's a retired history teacher in the area. Sandy Stemke. Anyway, they can show you around the museum, but it's packed with lots of historical artifacts, especially from the plant years. But there's also a few things in there on the natural history and other, you know, the farm, European farm history, and a little bit on the Ho-Chunk as well. But it's worth going into and taking a look around.
One of these other stewards on the Badger Lands is the Dairy Forage Research Center Field Station with about 2,100 acres there. What is this, Mike?
Well, this is off limits to the public too, but this is a collaboration between the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the University of Wisconsin. And they've been out there since the plant was, since the Army owned the property. And I think they started in the early 80s. And there it's a big farm operation, and they have cattle, farm, you know, dairy cattle, and a lot of ag land mixed in with some woods and other habitats as well. But their purpose is to develop, techniques and technology for making help the dairy industry, and both through the developing forages but going beyond that, especially in recent years, they're looking at things like sustainability and carbon sequestration, and looking at the whole effect of different types of farming that could be applied outside the fence there, you know, for dairy farms in the Midwest.
So, Melanie, sort of what I hear is the history of this land is now being represented in the current state of this land, that it was, you know, the sacred earth of the Ho-Chunk Nation, that it was a prairie land with pristine, rich soil, that it was a farmland, and then it became an ammunition plant for three wars. But after it closed at the end of the 1990s, today it stands as land for the Ho-Chunk people. It stands as prairie lands, and it stands as farms once again.
Yes, and I'd encourage you, you know, as you think about the lands also, when you refer to the Ho-Chunk people, to talk about us in the present tense. Because we're still very much here, and Sauk County is the second highest population of Ho-Chunk citizens, you know, compared to Jackson County, where Black River Falls is our tribal headquarters. So there's a lot of Ho-Chunk people, and still a lot of people that can speak on behalf of our continual connection to the land. Our LEAF does a workshop series in consort with the Nature Center at Devil's Lake State Park, and we provide 6 educational workshops free because they're underwritten by the Wisconsin Arts Board, a grant that we receive, as well as Sauk County helps us out occasionally with the grants. And, you know, it really kind of provides the visitors to our area with a true understanding. And when I introduce those workshops, when I am able to be there, I encourage the visitors to join us in calling the lake what it's been called for thousands of years, which is Day Wakanchuk, Sacred Lake. And if they venture further south, whether they're walking, hiking, camping, or bicycling, the land is all Ma Wakanchuk, sacred land. And perhaps if you consider it more as sacred land, you won't be, you know, taking your Starbucks container and freely throwing it out the window as you're leaving.
You would think about it twice when you recognize it as a sacred land.
Yeah, and every spring, you know, we go there and we do ceremonies and honoring the water spirit that lives under, you know, within Devil's Lake. And we want people to understand that this land is sacred. And maybe if they take time to really honor that land and think about its preciousness, maybe they'll put a little bit more care and compassion. You know, we've got a lot of climbers recreating on that land, a lot of people swimming in the water. We want everyone to be safe on that land. So just take some time and just honor it, you know, for what it is.
Melanie Talmadge-Sines, a citizen of the Ho-Chunk Nation and executive director of the Little Eagle Arts Foundation, online at littleeaglearts.org. Also a visual and cultural arts educator. Also joining us, Mike Mossman, president of the Badger History Group, online at badgerhistorygroup.org. Also a retired DNR ecologist. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mike, Sean in La Crosse emailed us and wants to know the story of Carl Armstrong's involvement in an attempted bombing at the Badger ammunition plant near shortly before he and his co-conspirators carried out the Sterling Hall bombing in Madison. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. Carl and his brother borrowed an airplane and flew over Badger, I believe it was on New Year's Eve, and dropped some sort of makeshift mayonnaise jar bombs that did not detonate, but it was, you know, we actually, in our oral histories that we've collected at the Badger History Group, we have a fairly long one with Carlton Armstrong talking about what he did, why he did it. And we also have, you know, many references in other oral histories and written histories there about how people felt about that worked at the plant and how they felt about the Vietnam War and all that. So it's just part of a really, you know, fascinating, endless story about the place and what it means to people. You know, Armstrong's uncle was one of the 4 men that was killed in the worst explosion at Badger right near the end of World War II. It killed 4 men, and what remained of them was buried in a common grave right next to Badger. One of those was his uncle, so he had connections there as well. Besides, you know, politically.
I had no idea about that. And it is a rich history of just a few thousand acres that makes you wonder. And It tells a story about this country, Melanie. There seems to be a tale to be told in 7,000 acres over the history of time, before it was even a country, when this was native lands, and today is still that way, at least a part of it.
Yeah, and I just want to share, that was a good segue to this point, that you know, if people are interested in visiting, I mean, they can reach out to Mike, they can reach out to myself, they can reach out to entities at the museum, and tours have been organized where groups like the Madison chapter of the National Audubon Society contacted, I think, Mike or Kurt Miney or someone affiliated with the Prairie organization. And, you know, we can organize different cultural tours. And it's just really wonderful to see people's connection to the land. And oftentimes folks that, you know, live in big urban settings, to get out on the land. I personally call it my happy place because I spend a day in meetings in Milwaukee or Madison, and then I come home and go to the studio and I open up the garage doors, and, you know, nature is just abundant there. And, you know, that to me is what life is all about.
Do you have hopes for the future of this sacred earth, Melanie? Is there things that you would still like to accomplish with this land?
Well, recently the Ho-Chunk Nation has removed the infrastructure that's around the ballistics testing area. And that area is just south of the bluffs. And there's a natural creek running through that area. And, you know, at some point we'd like to work with the Ho-Chunk Nation, because we do lease our building through the nation, you know, and get permission. There's no infrastructure there, however. There's no restroom facilities and there's no electricity there. So we'd have to bring in generators and porta potties. But, you know, to do something that would really be engaging, our organization is all about building bridges through the arts and cultural preservation through the arts. You know, there's so many walls being built today in our society. We need more bridges. So if this land can help to become a bridge to building community in Sauk County, then we're all over that.
Mike, what does land management look like on the Badger Lands today?
As I mentioned, on the Ho-Chunk land, they've done a lot of work keeping out invasive shrubs, and both to keep the existing European kind of based weedy grasslands in really fairly good shape for grassland wildlife, and then doing restoration. So they've brought fire back in a big way. It's amazing. Kurt Miney, he's been mentioned a couple times, very important person in kind of the rebirth of the Badger Lands. He and I were up on the moraine once, and we, in 2015, right after Ho-Chunk cut their land and they did their first fire, and it was a hugely emotional moment for us to see that fire back on the landscape, and especially being ignited and managed by the Ho-Chunk people. And so they've done a great job. It's a vast grassland. It's beautiful, full of wildlife and rare birds and so on. A big open spaces is a place I work in a lot. And so for the Ho-Chunk to monitor their ecological changes that they're affecting out there, and just to watch the sky come by every day and the storms and the sunrise and all that, there's no doubt that it's a spiritual place. It is for me, it is for many people, and I think even people that don't see it that way, they're often attracted to it. It's partly because of all this, you know, all the humanity and nature that has gone through these changes together out there, and these themes, as I mentioned, of displacement and pain and recovery and rebirth and healing. So that, to me, that's really inherent in that Ho-Chunk landscape. The DNR land, you're going to see bits of grassland. You're going to see some remnants of savanna, some of the volunteer groups have tried to start opening up, and the DNR has opened up to remove the invasive brush. And there's some wetland, you know, some kettle ponds out there. There's lots of interesting stuff. It's a great place. People love hunting out there as well. And then Dairy Forage has some mixed, you know, agricultural fields out there as well. But on the north side of all this, you know, is the South Range of the Baraboo Hills, and it's an incredibly beautiful, compelling backdrop for all the grassland at Badger. And it's if you up are up there and get to spend much time there, you know, it becomes a familiar and a place that you just love and love to return to. I used to work in the Baraboo Hills all the time in the lower Wisconsin River, all these great natural areas. And now I spend almost all my time in this kind of messed up place called Badger. And it's compelling. It's like you get so many people get the bug, and it's full of something.
Something spiritual. Melanie, before we run out of time here, there are some upcoming events for LEAF, the Little Eagle Arts Foundation, including a Native Art Marketplace coming up, I believe, in Spring Green.
Yes. I mean, when you talked about engaging people at the land, we'd love to do our signature event, which is our Native Art Marketplace. We'd love to do it at Mawakanchung, but like I said, we don't have the infrastructure to support. Over the 13 years that LEAF has been around, we've been able to engage with over 20 different partnering organizations throughout the state. And one of our wonderful partners is Taliesin Preservation in Spring Green. So our Native Art Marketplace will take place there August 1st and 2nd. We will have an information area giving kind of awareness to our studio at Mawakanchung and inviting people to come to the Fall Art Tour, which is in October. But if you join us in Spring Green, we'll have 15 of our best teaching artists there talking about their creative process. Maybe they've gathered materials that they integrate into their art. Maybe they've gathered it at Mawakanchung or Badger and, you know, integrate that in, and they'll be there to talk about it. We're also hosting our first concert. So we're inviting Delbert Anderson, a really popular Navajo horn player from New Mexico. He's going to be joining Wade Fernandez, who's Menominee, and my wonderful husband, Felix Sines, who is a phenomenal bassist. So it's kind of like a Southwest meets Midwest, because we hope to do more connections, bringing our Midwest Native artists down to Arizona at some point to the Taliesin and down there in Phoenix. And so we invite folks to come and engage with us.
August 1st and 2nd at the Taliesin Hillside School in Spring Green. And of course, you can find details on Melanie's website, littleeaglearts.org. And Mike, I've got about a minute here. What are your hopes for the future of these Badger lands?
Well, like Melanie, you waiting, you know, not waiting, taking part in and looking for the future, probably long after I'm gone, as the land continues to heal. And I think collaboration among the landowners, the land stewards, is a really critical part of that. And that's something that develops with trust and with working together. And it's something that Badger does have. We've worked on that. And I hope that continues into the future and we stop seeing sort of boundaries between different ownerships and see this grand, you know, native landscape back.
Is there a possibility of a welcome center or like a heritage center that could be there?
There's been a lot of talk about that. And it would be something that we hope would tell the many stories of Badger and really be something that would be instructive for people to think about how we affect the land and how it affects us and among all these cultures. And have the Ho-Chunk be well represented in it, along with you know, all their aspects of the history and the current cultures that are entwined there.
I want to thank you both for being a part of this conversation and giving us a view from the past to the present into the future of these Badger lands. Melanie Talmadge-Sines, thank you so much. Melanie is the citizen of the Ho-Chunk Nation, executive director of the Little Eagle Arts Foundation, again, littleeaglearts.org, and a visual and cultural arts educator. Mike, thank you to you.
Thanks, Lee. It's nice being here with you, Melanie, and everybody else that's out there listening.
See you on the prairie.
See you there.
Mike Mossman is a president of the Badger History Group, online at badgerhistorygroup.org, and a retired DNR ecologist. And I guess we will see you all on the prairie. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.